So it turns out you can win a world championship as an independent rider, and you don't even need a t-shirt to prove it. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. You have no idea who I was joking about in the intro, obviously. Welcome to episode 555 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us as ever. And yes, the 2024 MotoGP season is over. I'm just glad we got a happy ending. Well, if you're one half of the Ducati camp, I suppose. Yes, it is official. For the first time in the MotoGP era, we have an independent world champion, and his name is Jorge Martin. He did it. He beat the Bozo Gene allegations, mostly. We have a new world champion. We have an independent world champion, and we're going to talk all about it over the next half hour or so here on M101 in what we call the Solidarity Grand Prix review, because never going to be calling a Grand Prix the Solidarity Grand Prix, but of course we were racing for Valencia this weekend. Only it was in Barcelona, which is cool. If you haven't already, by the way, I'm going to be mildly serious for just a second here. If you haven't already, please, if you haven't, go to MotoGP's website. They have a QR code to scan. It goes straight to a donation page for the Spanish Red Cross. All that is to raise 100% of it goes towards the Spanish Red Cross, which will help the victims of the horrible flooding that has gone down in Valencia over the last month or so. Also, Aspar's fundraiser is still running for the next few days. They've raised over 200,000 euros in relief support. An incredible effort by the hometown heroes, our Aspar Grand Prix. If you haven't already, please give generously. I've decided on behalf of all of us here, we'll be donating 10 cents per point scored by Jorge Martin this season. So that's 50 euros and 50 cents heading towards the Spanish Red Cross. So on behalf of everybody at M101, thank you for all your continued support. If you can, please give generously. That would be cool as hell. Joining me to review this final race of the MotoGP season, as ever, first up, Mr. Cameron Buckley. Hello, Cameron.
Hello, everyone. You know, when you mentioned he beat the Bozo Gene allegations, it's more that someone else is mired in the Bozo Gene allegations, because this weekend really was everything great about Pekka Bagnaia. Shame about the rest of the season.
Yes, one way of putting it. Also joining us is Mr. RJ O'Connell. Hello, sir.
I was told that when we go back to our season preview, we all went with three different Ducati riders to win the world championship. Because let's be real, was it going to come from any other manufacturer?
Hell no.
Hell no. They lost one race this year. They reenacted the Nobody's Perfect poster.
They really did.
They really did.
Cam, you went with Marc Marquez vibes, feeling that the comeback was on. Maybe it was just a year early. Dre, you went with Pecco Bagnaia, and I went with Jorge Martin. And I've won, but at what cost?
As follows, Bezzecchi, Bastianini, Martin.
Sundays in general.
Primack. Attached file is too big to download.
Can I just say, I'm actually impressed and deeply disturbed that out of the three of us, for once, I was the sensible one when picking Pecco Bagnaia. And I have been stabbed.
Look where that got you.
I have been stabbed in the back by common sense. my man won 55% of the Grand Prix this year and lost the world title by 10 points. Because of course he did. Fuck me, am I right? Clearly.
the self-professed least biking inclined of the three of us was absolutely correct. Congrats, RJ.
Well done, Mr. O'Connell. Well played, sir.
Thank you. I get nothing out of this. I expected nothing. Should we put a bow on this season?
Let's do that. Let's quickly talk about the places you can find us real quick. We are on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We are on Elon Musk's failed business investment at motorsport_101. You can also follow us there on our personal pages at DreHarris101 and RJ O'Connell and at CBuckley917. I believe we all go by the same username on the other site where the sky is blue. So if you want to follow us on there as well, you can. Mine's slightly different. No number in my one. Just find my name, Dre Harrison. Can't miss it.
Dre Harrison, RJ O'Connell, C Buckley 917. We're all on good Twitter now. We're also on bad Twitter, if you so prefer.
Yes. No. We contain multitudes.
Ain't getting out of this chair.
As you do. We are old as fuck. It's what we do around here. Also, you can check us out on our website, motorsport101.com, for all the social media details and some extra written content on the blog page. If you want to read a full review of the Solidarity Grand Prix, it's not a lengthy piece. You can read that over there as well as part one of my written season review. It went up today as we record this. So all thoughts on the entire seasons of Honda, Yamaha, and Aprilia. Part two containing KTM and Ducati will be out probably by the weekend. Tentative prediction. We'll wait and see how we go on that one. But I suspect by the time Formula One's raced in Las Vegas this weekend, it'll probably be out, is what I would tentatively say. So keep your eyes peeled on that. Also, thanks for reminding me, Jason, the Motorsport 101 award ballot is out right now.
Yeah. Go check our Twitter feed. Go check our bad Twitter feed. We've also put it on good Twitter.
Yeah,
Jason did a good job of putting together awards ballots in numerous categories: the funny, the serious, the sincere, the joking,
and the unserious.
We've got a couple new ones this year, so be sure to get those in. I am personally waiting for the F1 season to finish up, but I feel like I've got a couple nominees locked in.
Yeah, check out the website as well. Next week, I will have a full post out explaining my nominations, because why not? It's free promotion.
I'm not giving away what I voted for. Are you kidding me?
All I'm saying is I need the last couple of pieces of evidence to cement my nomination for the Golden Cock.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see how that goes. So like I said, check out the pinned tweet on our Twitter account at motorsport_101. It's on our blue sky. It's on my personal blue sky page as well, if you want to find it. We'll pin it on all the other social media places we normally go to. And then we'll leave a link down below in the description of this episode. You have until December the 15th. So just under a month from now.
One day before my birthday.
Yes, December the 5th, as RJ celebrates his 21st birthday for roughly the 13th time.
I wish the listeners could see the look of despair on O'Connell's face.
That was rough. You can check that out if you haven't already. December 15th is the deadline. Do vote in your plentiful. That'll be our Christmas special out a little bit later on in the year. December 15th, Motorsport 101 Awards. Get your ballots in now. We've got to December 15th. Do check that out if you haven't already. And of course, if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon. Patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content, including early episodes and some early written content. You could get my early thoughts on Trackhouse, from part one of our MotoGP season review that came out early over there. So I do like to drop little written bits and pieces here and there early now out as well, all included in the silver tier package, which Galarian Mike subscribed to today. So thank you very much, Mike. Thank you for backing us on Patreon, my friend, and a special shout out to Mike because he shares and retweets everything we post on Motorsport 101, the most consistent share of our content I've ever seen on social media. His feed is probably sick of my shit by now, but I am very grateful for it. So, Mike, I know you're listening. Thank you, buddy. It's really appreciated.
Sounds like someone we could bring along for a salary as our social media guy.
just retweet all the things. Yes, that works. That would be an M101 social media strategy if we actually had one. But yes, check that out as well. You get a great to the $10 tier if you want to back us on there as well. That the $10 tier gets you into the supporters club of our Discord server, where you can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Jason is doing so right now. Thank you as ever, Jason, for your ongoing support, my friend. Thank you. Right, without further ado, and after this, let's review the Solidarity Grand Prix.
And you heard it right at the top of the show. Jorge Martin is your 2024 MotoGP champion of the world. We had the Solidarity Grand Prix in Barcelona. This, of course, the relocated Grand Prix that was meant to be in Valencia. We know why it couldn't take place there. And yeah, this was kind of a nothing burger of a weekend, but we did get some kind of intrigue out of it. Francesco Bagnaia tried. He did what he needed to do in the sprint, almost what he needed to do. Bastianini won the sprint for Bagnaia Martin. And Bagnaia pretty much led the Grand Prix from lights to flag ahead of Marquez. But all Jorge Martin needed was ninth in the Grand Prix, and he got third. With Aleix Espargaró behind him in fourth in his last ride as a full-time rider or ever. So Jorge Martin, as we mentioned, first rider of the MotoGP era to win as an independent, did this with three Grand Prix victories and six sprints. What do you want to talk about first?
Not an awful lot to say about the actual racing this weekend because, I mean, this was Barcelona in the middle of November.
Bit chilly,
bit cold, bit lacking of grip. Everybody was kind of playing 50% here on this one because the thing is, right, this race had one of the least amounts of crashes over the course of the weekend all year because everybody was kind of going at 80% pretty much all weekend because they knew if they were taking liberties, they would likely crash.
And for much of the grid, I mean, there wasn't really a whole lot to play for because it was out of Bagnaia's hands. He gave it the old college try. He scored maximum points, but maximum points were not enough. Kind of a weird Grand Prix weekend in that regard. As you said, just a lot of people just, I almost wonder if the test the next day, given that's a lot of 2025 machinery getting on track for the first time, that was taking precedent. Okay, not a lot to play for. Let's get through the weekend and get to the test, because the test is where a lot of these people are going to be making their money next year.
I was going to say, like, it felt more like an extended testing weekend for a lot of people. That's the vibe that it kind of felt like for most of the weekend, other than just the whole, we're just kind of glad we got this race. You know, and it wasn't a full crowd, but this race did sell out. Every seat that was made available was purchased. And a shout out to the Catalunya organizers who said, we're donating the fee towards the victims of Valencia. So they effectively hosted this race for free, which is a very cool gesture. The first thing I need to say more than anything else is salute to Dorna, to Michelin, to all the suppliers, the IRTA, and to everybody that was able to pull this off, because to organize an entire Grand Prix weekend in 10 days is incredibly impressive.
Extraordinary crunch by them. I mean, we voiced our concerns very publicly on this show of what are the logistics going to look like? How are we going to get everyone there? Is it even feasible? And to knock that out in 10 days, Dorna absolutely outdid themselves, as did everyone involved for just coming together and making this weekend happen.
Yeah, this was not supposed to happen in any way, shape, or form, and they found a way to get it done. And like as Dennis Noyer said perfectly on Twitter, most Grand Prix takes months to organize. Months. There's a process. The logistics, the red tape, the organization takes weeks, if not months. Dorna pulled this off in 10 days. That is remarkable. From so many people involved. So a salute to everyone that was able to even make this happen is incredible. Francesco Bagnaia was incredible. And again, let's not play down how brilliant he was this weekend, because he was
unstoppable.
He was absolutely inch perfect all weekend. There was nothing more he can do but go all out, and he went all out, and he was perfect. Qualified on pole, led pretty much every single racing lap all weekend, won the sprint and the Grand Prix. It's the fifth time this season he's doubled up over the course of this season. His 11th Grand Prix win of the year. I think only four men in history have ever won 11 Grand Prix in a weekend. And sadly, it's the 73-9 2016 Golden State Warriors. Yeah. You won 11 Grand Prix in a season, and he didn't win the big one.
Well, the problem is, Dre, is that these last three scored sessions, he was absolutely maniacally perfect. Perfect this weekend. Terrifying in Sepang. But what was his finish before that? Well, it wasn't one. He DNF'd. Was Pecco Bagnaia personified. Perfect all weekend. But he let Martin in Sepang, even before then, and it just was not enough. Someone, after 3 years of leaving the door open, someone finally caught their foot in the door.
And yeah, that's the best way to transition to talking about Jorge Martin. And again, let's not play down Jorge Martin's role in what's been a superb season from him. A season where, yeah, we ragged on him early on because of the two races he crashed out in from the lead. And we thought, oh no, Jorge Martin's doing it again. He's blowing this. He had as much as a 60-point lead nearly at one point at the start of the year, because Bagnaia had such a rough start with crashes and rear-end chatter problems. Martin had ample opportunity to stretch out a big lead. By the summer break, it was virtually all gone. He went back and forth, and what we didn't realize in that back half of the year until maybe that Malaysian sprint was that Martin was racking up second places and racking up podiums every weekend. He was not giving he was forcing Bagnaia to be perfect, to do damage to him. And Bagnaia was responding in kind, but that Malaysian sprint crash, and Bagnaia admitted it himself during this weekend, he said to the media that's where the title was lost. He just gave himself too much to do. And Martin, all he had to do was get the bike home. And I love the fact he admitted after the race, he said to Bagnaia on the podium before going on to collect his trophy and smash a huge bottle of champers. Tried doing the Lando Norris trick. Unsuccessful.
He didn't even get to pick it up. He just tipped it over and it fell into a million little pieces up on the podium. Smashed it.
Yeah, he said straight up, I didn't even look at my dashboard until there was six laps to go. I was trying to intentionally ignore the lap count. He said he glared at it by accident when there were six laps left. And apparently that's when he started to feel it, where it was like, oh no, this is actually going to happen, which I thought was just hilarious. But I mean, the stat that leaps off the page to me this year, Cam, 17 second place finishes across the season.
Jorge Martin, floor guy. Didn't think he'd be saying that a year after 2023.
What happened here?
And he was not perfect in taking the points as established, but he began to. And he began to force Pecco's hand. As Jason puts in the chat, Martin took the title lead in Aragon, and he never gave it back.
No. He did what he needed to do to mitigate and manage it. And again, there was a couple of race weekends after that where Bagnaia made a couple of critical mistakes. Misano 2 was another big one that Bagnaia made. That was the world title. That was 16 points if he takes a safe third place. If he cashes in that
too much risk.
He saw the gap come down from 2 to 1.6 seconds and then got a rush of blood to the head. It's as simple as that. If he takes those safe 16 points, he's world champion for the third year in a row. And Martin basically forced Bagnaia to win four out of the last five to even have a chance, and even then it wasn't enough. If you see his Wikipedia page of the championship, it is a sea of silver for Jorge Martin.
He's just racking up the points. And such is the problem with Pecco, that when it was great, he was transcendently great. And when he was bad, he was on the ground next to a broken Desmond Sidiche too many times. Not all of those were his fault. There was a couple of those that were very 50-50. There were a couple of those that were. But we've been critical of Pecco's risk assessment pretty much every year he's been in the top class. And he finally got punished for it one final time. And on the way out of the Ducati fold, Jorge Martin takes the number one plate and heads to Aprilia.
Manufacturer holding the number one plate speedrun challenge, unless Aprilia does something very, very significant in the winter months.
Look, good luck beating that streak with McDoohan back in the 90s. Yeah. He should retire the one. I mean, he owned that thing back in the day.
He really did. You guys pretty much got it in one. I mean, Martin, we mocked him relentlessly for the Saxon Ring. He didn't crash in a Grand Prix after that for the rest of the season. It really is a
screwed on straight. I mean, Jason puts it in the chat again. Three swings during the season where Martin gained 20 plus during a weekend.
Yeah. Jerez, where Bagnaia, I think, tucked it in the sprint, I want to say. No, it wasn't that one. It was Portimao because of the crash with Marquez. It was Aragon, the crash with Marquez, the other Marquez, on that occasion, and Le Mans, because Bagnaia crashed in the sprint, didn't he? Technical failure. It was a technical failure.
That was his engine.
His engine failed.
So that one wasn't even his fault.
But there's just too many things piled up over the course of the year. And I mean, we talked about it at length on the Formula One side of this podcast, where if you keep leaving the door open, like McLaren have done so many times this year, it opens you up to the counterpunch.
But the problem is Lando Norris didn't win 11 races this season.
But he very well could have won probably double digits. But all it ever takes then is one big counterpunch to make it unassailable. That's what they did in Brazil. And in Sepang, Bagnaia, if he was perfect to the end of the season, maybe he clutches it out. And he dropped the bike.
Well, you know, if he finishes the sprint in second in Sepang, he loses the world title by 1 point. Because he crashed from second in that sprint. Yeah. He was second in the moment he tucked the front.
And he got beat off the line.
Yeah, he got beat off the line because that was another Jorge Martin X factor. He was so brilliant off the grid. He was dictating the terms of engagement in a lot of these races. He was forcing Bagnaia to take risk to pass him because there was a good chance he was getting to turn one first.
Yeah, Bagnaia had at least four or five really poor starts off the line.
And Aragon.
Aragon was horrendous. And then he has to cut back through the field while Martin can lead from the front. There's lots of little things done well define Martin's year. Wasn't perfect, but it was enough.
It's hard to win a world title in Francesco Bagnaia's case when you have a 20% DNF rate across the season, because that was 8 in total for Pecco Bagnaia in the 40 races or sprints that we had all year.
Only 3 of them were in Grand Prix. It's almost like we're making the point that, like, you know, Grand Prix don't mean shit now.
Well, if you ask a NASCAR playoff supporter, who you should listen to on anything,
no,
you know, you play to the format. And in this format, we've got a sprint that plays exactly to Martin's strengths and gives you more opportunities to lose it. And in this case, it wasn't even so much that Pecco was so much worse on Saturday compared to Martin. Said he wasn't good enough on enough Sundays to compensate.
Well, the swing is simple. On sprints, Jorge Martin was 43 points better than Bagnaia this year. In Grand Prix, Bagnaia was 33 points better than Martin by the time it was all said and done. The sprints cost Bagnaia the title. There's no getting around it. Like, and we said this about Bagnaia last year, that his game plan was a flawed one. It was last year he was treating the sprint as a glorified test session for Grand Prix. It worked out in the end, mostly because Martin blew what could have been a 30-plus point lead with the way his season collapsed from Indonesia towards the run-in. But I said at the time last year, a better rider is going to punish you for treating Saturdays in an unserious manner. What happened this year? Jorge Martin made his bank on Saturday, and he forced Bagnaia to go chase him. And he couldn't do it this time.
And he was good enough on Sundays to make it work. But at the same time as well, it wasn't even like last year where Pecco was off the pace on the sprints. He just crashed out of a bunch of them this year.
Yeah. Which is weird because he's such a good qualifier that yet 12 laps or half distance over the limit compared to what a Grand Prix setup is like, he struggled a lot of the time. Mm. And this is weird when we're talking about a guy who, oh, by the way, also won 6 sprint races this year.
Well, it was kind of a league of two once the GP24's chatter problems were solved. And Mark did his damnedest this weekend, but it was those two and then Mark chasing and then not a whole lot else. That was your podium for much of the year.
Yeah, Marquez was nowhere in this final race weekend until the Grand Prix. Apparently, Frankie Karcecki did something radical to the setup on Sunday morning. They found something. And next thing you know, Marquez is the only person that can stay with Pecco in the race.
Those two are throwing haymakers.
Because Gresini doesn't make any goddamn sense. And Frankie put out a very heartfelt message on Twitter after the race was over saying, thanks for all the fun this year and for all the kind messages. It was an honor to be able to work with the greatest of all time. Of all the best for 2025 is what he basically said. And he'll be working with Fermin out again next year. Best in the business. He's a very lucky man.
He's going to have a very fast, very capable rider to mold into a top-class rider.
And hey, that second place in the Grand Prix for Marquez was enough to get him third in the Riders' Championship. He beat Andrea Bastianini by 6 points, and it was all said and done.
Where was the next GP23 rider?
The next GP23 rider was Alex Marquez. A small matter of 219 points back. Yeah.
Built different. Did also love the nugget after the race, because Alex Bargaro ended his active racing career to go test for Honda. I'm so sorry.
Someone's got to figure out what's wrong with that bike.
The whole thing. Circle the entire bike. This is the problem. And I did love his jab after the race with Andrea Bastianini, unimpressed with Aleix practically fighting for Jorge in the race. Like, well, I was waiting for Andrea to come get me, but he was 10 seconds behind me on a factory Ducati.
One last bit of spice on the way out. What a man.
Fatality.
Bastianini just straight up accused Aleix of riding for his friend, which is ironic given that Andrea Bastianini denied team orders at Ducati at every opportunity until the final weekend, where allegedly he was financially motivated to do so. Depending on who you
are. And we're going to pay you in gold and we'll leave it all under the podium.
A classic.
That's really all she wrote about the actual race. Not a whole lot in terms of track action otherwise, because as aforementioned, Barcelona, cold, awful front tires, etc.
Yeah, right.
What we did get as well is the end of Taka Nakagami and Stefan Bradl and their Grand Prix racing careers. And man, it feels like Bradl got a big extension on his Grand Prix career, being the Honda test guy and being Honda's guinea pig, frankly, for a lot of their developmental nonsense over the last 7-8 years. But Taka, man.
Oh.
It's like he came good the moment that Honda went bad.
I feel bad for Taka in the sense of Don't get me wrong. He had a good career. You don't fluke getting 7 years in the top flight. That's a good run by any measure. That 2020 season, he was genuinely in title contention until that Aragon
weekend. He had a pole in Aragon.
And then he threw it away on the very first lap.
In almost the most tacker of fashions, just when you thought there was hope, you might get that at least that first Grand Prix podium, he threw it away at turn five, as you do. But the thing with Tacker is that he was incredibly loyal to Honda, almost too loyal at times. I remember him riding with blood in his gloves when he was...
shredded tendons in his hand.
Yeah, because he was so desperate to ride a home Grand Prix for his home fans because of obviously complications with COVID and calendar rearranging. He hadn't had the opportunity to race it at home for 3 years, and he was desperate to do so for his hometown fans. So he rode with blood in his gloves and destroyed tendons in his fingers just trying to race for them because they just wanted to see him. And that's the sort of rider that Tacker was. He was arguably Honda's most loyal guinea pig of recent years. And sadly, nothing for Honda really worked out. And Tacker, for 90% of that time, did it with a smile on his face, did it without ever complaining. It only when it got real bad towards the end of his career that he really started opening up, almost out of sheer frustration at the lack of resources that Honda was giving him to work with.
This year, Dre, he didn't get a current spec 213V until this weekend. And I'm sorry. And we'll
he's
get
a
it
test to, rider.
He's going to be your test rider. And Honda needs all the help they can get. We'll get into how their test went because, it wasn't in a moment. But I completely understand where he was coming from. Basically, it started to really boil over last year when the sheer scale of the hole they were in became quite clear. But he's been a very solid rider pretty much all career. And I hope, given where Honda are on the concession scale, that...
Tier D.
If there was a Tier F, they would belong in it, but...
These are those it goes.
We are inventing new floors. I hope that this isn't the last time we see him racing a motorcycle in anger.
I'm sure it will not be. Like, for God's sakes, there is always,
please.
He's all a race that he won 14 years ago. Christ.
Doesn't feel like he's that old.
He isn't.
Yeah.
He's only 32.
Yeah.
Christ, I am decrepit.
He won Suzuka as a teenager?
Yes, he did.
His nuts hadn't even dropped yet. Come on.
with a satellite team, no less, in Musashi HARC Pro.
Yeah.
One more point I want to make about this season, because we mentioned like NASCAR and playoffs, and is this what we want to be, to have an 11-win season be rewarded with no championship? It didn't remind me of Ryan Newman 2003. We all know that season where he won more races than anybody, but also crashed out more than anybody, and that's why he didn't win the title. Finish second.
You know what comparison I would draw it to?
1996 Jeff Gordon.
Get the hell out of my head.
Because I just shared in this story. Jeff Gordon, for those of you who don't know, had it in 31 races, 10 wins, 21 top fives, 24 top tens, 5 pole positions. Flawless season. Second in a string of 4 consecutive 10-win seasons at the NASCAR Cup Series level. The problem was that he had just 2 more DNFs than his Hendrick Motorsports teammate, Terry Labonte, who only had 2 wins. And that was enough for Gordon to lose the title by 37 points. Now, for Gordon, that was just, you know, the difference between winning 4 straight championships in the mid to late 90s and not. For Pecco Bagnaia, that was the difference between being a 3-time champion and being a 2-time champion when you don't know when you're going to get another opportunity to get that 3rd championship, if it ever comes.
Well, I suppose that segues us quite nicely into our testing coverage, because
This was the real spice of the weekend. First and foremost, Mark Marquez's bike. It's so red. It's blown out my color balance.
It is that it's that Velma suit red. If you know, you know.
Whoa. My desk just shook. Toro Aloha, which is Italian for all red. Apparently, it was Mark Marquez's idea to actually have the all red livery for his first test. There's strong rumors as well. He's going to be a Monster Energy athlete, at least in name, soon as well, because Ducati are powered by Monster. And obviously he's walked away from Red Bull, backed Gresini.
That's crazy.
And what have you. Apparently it was his idea. It was also apparently Pecco Bagnaia's idea to have a white Ducati as one of his two testing bikes, because it was his idea, because he wanted to pay tribute to Casey Stoner and his Australian Grand Prix liveries of old, which was another cool touch. Why can't we do this during actual Grand Prix rather than the fucking test session?
Because there's contractual obligations that need to be met, and that's also part of the reason why Mark Marquez was not riding in full Ducati colors, because I'm sure he still has a Red Bull term that he needs to finish out.
He does. Runs to December the year. First. And here is when his Red Bull contract runs out, along with the fact that, I mean, we kind of saw this last year with Gresini, where he was on a completely unmarked, unsponsored bike, other than number and livery, because he was still technically contracted to Honda, at least his commercial commitments. Because remember, he was at Honda Thanks Day for 2023.
Yeah, you got to remember, most MotoGP contracts are played out till the end of the calendar year.
Yeah.
So you don't, like, that's why a lot of riders can't, some of them are legally not allowed to talk about their new bikes until January 1st. Like Jack Miller, for example, had his first test with Pramac Yamaha over the course of the test on Wednesday, but he was legally not allowed to talk to the media about how his Yamaha felt, so he couldn't talk. Miguel Oliveira could do, and he did. Again, it all depends on how these contracts break out, the language that's in them. It's complicated, but you've got to treat every individual on a case-by-case basis on this one. So it is what it is in that sense. Alex Marquez was fast in the test. No real surprise there. He had the least amount of adapting to do to a 24 Ducati. His goal was simple. Get used to being on the new Duke fast, and that's exactly what he did.
Yeah, he was actually, I think he was about a little over 4.5 tenths faster than his actual qualifying time, because by all accounts, as he would put it, the 24 is a much easier bike to ride. Mark also gave the feedback that the GP25, much easier to ride than the GP23. God help us all.
That's a big step forward for the GP25, is that it's not supposed to be like revolutionarily quicker, but it is supposed to be easier to ride than its predecessor.
The big step was the 24, and the 25 is the refinement and the perfection of that. Whether that is the case, we'll see next year, but early signs look good.
I was going to say as well, Cam, I'm going to cut you real quick.
Yep.
Simon Crafoss said at the end of the testing coverage and his last bit of coverage before he becomes MotoGP's lead steward next year.
New scapegoat.
Lead beehive recipient.
Yes, I sent him a jar of honey as a thank you. Welcome aboard. First one's on the house. He also said Ducati is going to be testing a new aero package in Sepang.
How fun. that kind of makes sense, given lead times for things like that. Just to kind of roll through it, I mean, the rookies looked solid. Aigura, Chantra, Aldeguer all look good.
They all crushed his wardrobe, which was what was quite funny.
That's their initiation, you see.
My favorite one was Somkiat Chantra, who's ridden the MotoGP bike for the first time, apparently lifted his head above the tuck position at 210 miles an hour down the main straight. And he said, quote, "Holy fuck, that's fast."
So this is what 330 horsepower feels like.
Exactly.
If he's last place in the championship, but he's like that all the time, I won't even give a shit.
Well, Honda might be ensuring that he's last place in the championship. Now, We all know the plight that Honda is in. You know that personally, as a Honda MotoGP fan, everything hurts.
This is like the equivalent of when, like, every other M101 episode was basically Ferrari fan therapy.
Ah, yes, 2020. Fun.
Nothing's changed, well, by the way.
Would y'all like to know how many new parts Honda brought to this test?
At least a dozen, I'm sure, right? They've got a lot of work to do to, like, you know, on the aero side of things, at least before that's all, like, gone. You know, maybe some better electronics, like, I don't know, some refinements to the bike. But you got to throw a lot of stuff at it and see what works.
Lower.
60 parts?
Lower.
Two.
Too low. Lower.
It's zero.
Jack shit. And Johan Mir had a nuclear meltdown post-test.
I crashed again in another Grand Prix, my 10th of the year, for this?
You know, I have a 1980 Honda CB750 in my garage.
Mm-hmm.
The gas tank rotted out on it years ago, and I really need to get around to listing that thing for parts on Craigslist. And I could have brought more test parts from that bike than Honda brought to this test, which is zero!
There it is.
I think Cam's about to bust. Not in the nice way, either.
Yeah, blood vessel in my brain. God, what are we doing?
In the words of the late Kobe Bryant, he wet the bed. The big one. One you can't put a towel over.
I'm just looking up at Honda's technical staff going, soft. Oh, man, yeah. Too angry to die. I honestly feel like having a SpongeBob-level crash out, but I don't even have the energy to do it anymore.
It's just painful. Like, I honestly, you look at Honda and you read these stories and your eyes just roll back into your skull. Luca Marini about to bust again because Marini crashed during the test and Yohan Mir had no new parts and was visibly frustrated at the fact that he had nothing to test besides the bike that was already there. A bike that he probably can't wait to get away from because, as I mentioned earlier, he had a 50% DNF rate in Grand Prix this year. It was the fifth time he's crashed in a race in the last six rounds.
This is Yohan Mir, who won the 2020 MotoGP World Championship through sheer blistering consistency when riders like Fabio Quartararo were inconsistent, particularly down the stretch.
When no one else could keep a bike upright. He won a championship through doing so.
And he could not get the bike upright.
It's fucking ridiculous.
Do you realize that this is the last time we'll see a Repsol Honda on a track?
The marriage of 29 years.
Is over.
It is over. Big Ozymandias vibes. Look upon my works, ye mighty, and despair. Nothing. There's nothing here but the lone sticker at the bottom of that fairing that will be wiped away and condemned to history.
And replaced with Castrol.
Probably.
Almost certainly.
Whoop-de-fucking-do. The bike is going to look so fantastic in 19 next year.
May their woes be many and their days few.
At least Yamaha was good, right? Question mark?
They said they were ahead of schedule. Yeah, they brought stuff. They said they liked it. Fabio was happy with it. And they said that Miguel Oliveira went into actually a lot of detail about this, saying first impressions, the bike is really easy to ride. It's a very user-friendly bike. But he was also quick to maintain that's not entirely a good thing because being comfortable doesn't necessarily mean you're fast.
Well, that's been the thing, is that when the Yamaha was comfortable, it was fast until a few years ago, and then it was still comfortable, but not fast. And then this year, and really last year, it was a combination of still not very fast, but not as comfortable as it used to be. So everything they bring is kind of secondary to eventually getting the V4 up and running. And that's going to be a fundamental architecture reset on the bike. Not much that they have now is going to carry over to a V4 M1. If they even call it the M1, because that's That's the biggest swing that Yamaha will have made at their bike since the two-stroke era.
Yeah.
Going to four strokes. So how Yamaha's doing right now is almost not all that relevant because they're going to have a hard reset at some point in 2025. If they can at least cure what they can on this bike up into next season, they can at least do aero work and they can at least begin to lay the groundwork for their 850cc bike when those regulations roll around for 2027. That's got to be the goal these next 2 years, is just build up what you can, hit the ground running with the new rules.
And you got to remember, because they're in tier D at the moment, they are unaffected by the upcoming engine freeze that's going to kick in at the start of next season. They do not have to homologate their engines. They're allowed to develop them at pace. They're allowed 10 engines as well instead of the 8 that the rest of the field will have in 2025. So Yamahas can basically develop as much as they please on this V4. And that's the wise thing to do. They've got 2 years to work on this. Work on it. Apparently, they are going to bring their first proper version of it in Sepang in February. So we'll see how that goes. But good to hear that there's actually some positives to come out of the Yamaha camp for the first time in a while.
And to that effect, that goes back to why Ducati are waiting to continue developing their next aero package. Mm. Because once they bring it, that's it. It's homologated. They can't change it again because of the tier they're in. So they really have to make sure they get it right going through into 2025 for the GP25.
Indeed.
What else? KTM brought their latest shipment of crack.
It was literally coated in white, and it had a very narrow-looking nose. So
no, that was the black one. That was the black one. That was the really, really narrow nose.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So the nose got blown out, so that would make sense if you were on coke. So, It was covered in white powder and the snout was really big, if fits. But look, KTM looked quick. Pedro Acosta was very comfortable out there on the factory bike. Again, no homologation or adaptation needed because the bike was very similar. But the KTMs looked pretty solid out there. Acosta in particular was in the top five pretty much for the whole test. I loved it also his helmet design on the helmet that said, coming home for Christmas. On his first day with the KTM officially as a factory, like he was back in Moto2 again. And I love that one day after Augusto Fernandez was gone, he took his 37 on the way out. I was like, I'll take that. Off you go.
Don't mind if I do. Yeah, generally, I mean, I think it's going to be a really interesting offseason for KTM. Feels like we've been saying that every year since 2017. I think their biggest target needs to be their chatter issues. That's what's crippled them all year, rather than just all in on aero. But we also don't know what KTM is going to look like next year because their parent company is in deep financial shit.
Yes.
To put it mildly. So
they need a bridging loan to get them through this restructure, apparently. So they're in some financial dog water here, to say the least. Not good.
And that first of all, that raises concerns. What's their budget going to be? They have other programs to jettison before you get to the MotoGP team. Supposedly, they already have with a planned entry into World Supersport canned before it even hit the track.
Yep.
And the Moto2 and Moto3 teams, which are not moneymakers. They are there to build a ladder.
They're loss makers.
If a creditor comes knocking and says, we'll help you, but you have to cut down the motorsport programs. And that is the responsible thing to do as a parent company in the automotive industry. The MotoGP team might not be under the gun yet, but they have to get their shit together as a company, because if the MotoGP, if it comes between competing in MotoGP and the survival of KTM as a brand, you know what they're going to pick.
Why do you think David Alonso is at Aspar?
Collateral, just in case. Because that's run by CF Moto, which ironically is a KTM-owned sub-brand. It's worth pointing out here that, for those who don't know the full story, I'll quickly add some nuance to this. KTM peaked at operating at 94 Swiss francs on the, I believe it was the Swiss stock exchange, That was back in 2022. Their acquisitions of a bunch of sub-brands, their customer reviews and multiple recalls on a lot of their bikes. So bad customer satisfaction. And this year it was the announcement that they're not going to hit their sales projections for this year, caused their stock price to crater. They're now trading at 13 Swiss francs. They were at 94 2 years ago.
Is that good?
It's an 85% drop in their market share and market value in the space of less than 2 years. It's not good, to say the least. And there's other factors to take into account. Allegedly, Red Bull are not giving them as much funding as they used to. Post Dietrich Mateschwitz's passing away, as I mentioned before on the F1 side of the pod, Oliver Mintzlaff is a football man.
He's not a racing guy.
He's not a racing guy. He's looking at the raw numbers and going, this doesn't make sense for us. Dietrich, to his credit, if you want to give him that, now he's passed on, he put motorsport first. He always did. He loved motorsport. Even if it was prepared to lose him money, he would fund it because he loved it. Say what you will about the man on and off the track or whatever you want to say about him. The one thing you can't deny, he loved motorsport. And unfortunately, Oliver Mintzlaff is not that guy. He's a football dude. That's his background, and football dudes have to look at the numbers. They cannot... That is a sport where you cannot trade for the love of the game. Trust me.
No.
You'll lose too much money in football doing that. That's KTM in a nutshell, basically. And we'll talk about it more in our season review in a couple of weeks' time. But none of this is good.
No, and none of this is good for an entity which, once again, a distant second knocking on the door, but summarily blown out of the water by Ducati this year. They failed to win a Grand Prix proper this year.
Yeah, no, and they only had... Well, they had six podiums this year. Five of them came from Pedro Acosta, technically in the Tech 3 sub-team. And all the sub-brands are going away for next season. So no Gas, no Husqvarna branding, none of that.
It's a pair, effectively, of full-blown KTM factory teams, because Tech 3 mm-hmm. get full factory support in all but name.
Yes.
And then, weirdly,
Aprilia broke the streak.
Aprilia have him. They have the number one.
Testing kings. No one put in more mileage than them. The three leaders in test mileage were Jorge Martin, Ayagura, and Marco Bezzecchi. All the prettier riders. So they put a lot of rubber down on that test day. So fair play to them on that one, at least. And they looked all right out there.
Martin looked good on the bike. He did dump the 2025 prototype at his beloved Turn 5. He needs shoulder sliders.
Of poor judgment, of course.
But other than that, he looked solid out there. He was ringing the bike's neck a little bit and adapting to it well. It's still never a good sign, though, when pretty much every time coming out of the first sector, which at Barcelona is a straight and two long corners, getting cooked in a straight line.
That mid-range is still not there for Aprilia, which is going to be a problem. I don't know what sort of aero jungle juice that team's going to bring to Sepang in February, but we'll have to wait and see. They're the teams I've got the most amount of question marks about going into the break. I don't know how I feel about Aprilia going into Sepang, but we'll have to wait and see on that one. That pretty much covers all the testing notes. One more thing to note before we get out of here. David Alonso, still the hymnist of hymns.
Still 100% Himalayan. Most wins in a moto class ever, I believe. Yeah.
In the 75-year history of Grand Prix motorcycle racing, in any class, any year, any era, anywhere, no rider has ever won 14 races in a single season until Sunday. It's never been done, ever. David Alonso has now got an all-time record. He's one of one. He's the only rider in history with a 14-win season to his name. Even Mark at his best only ever got to 13.
Oh, how will he live with himself?
I know. It's a dreadful season by standards, but again...
That's why he's on the factory Ducati next year. He knew this was going to happen.
Yeah, he ended up winning the record back. He ended up winning the Moto3 World Championship by 165 points.
That's a lot.
That is a metric fuck ton, scientifically.
And, yeah, 7 wins in a row to close out the year. First time that had been done since, I want to say, Fausto Grassini in 1987, where he won, I think, 10 of 12 that season in the what was then the 125cc class, God rest his soul. But that was the last time anyone in the lightweight class championship season had won 7 straight. And if you watch the race, it's another Alonso masterclass. Gets beaten up a little bit in the midfield, shows great pace, gets to the front, pulls out 3 bike lengths, and then they can't catch him. He's just too good.
He is one of the only riders I've seen that that can break the field basically at will in Moto 3. You can't peloton behind him.
No.
He's just too fast.
If he's able to defend himself on the front straight, you can't pass him anywhere else. He's just that good. And don't get me wrong, I've said this before, this is on paper a really strong Moto 3 field. Colin Vaya, Danny Holgado, Ivan Ortola, David Munoz, Adrian Fernandez, Angel Piqueras, I think, is going to be next season.
He's just torched all of their stock.
He's obliterated them. He's destroyed them. Like it's otherworldly what David Alonso has done in Moto 3 this season. A salute to that young man. He was in the streets of Valencia just last week helping with the cleanup efforts. He's a good boy. He really is. He donated his win bonus as well from the last 2 rounds to the relief efforts as well. He's an incredibly wise and mature young man for his 18 years. He's disgustingly likable. And he's going to go to Aspar's Moto 2 team next year alongside the man who was second in the championship. Danny Holgado will be his teammate at Aspar next year. So keep an eye on that. A couple of little minor moves as well, because Framac has now taken over Yamaha's Moto 2 team for next year as well. And they're going to have Izan Guevara. Remember him? He's going to be on their setup for next year alongside Tony Arbolino. So two very strong Moto 2 riders potentially in that setup. And allegedly they'll be running Boscanoro chassis. Keep an eye on that one. But honestly, that will just about do it for our MotoGP 2024 season at large. We have one more episode to go. Check back in a couple of weeks' time for a full MotoGP season review podcast. Stay tuned. We might have an old friend coming on. Keep an eye on our social media for more on that one. I'm not going to go and say who, but if you're eagle-eyed and you follow us on Elon Musk's failed business investment, it's worth checking out. Hold the thought for a couple of weeks, that's all.
We should also drop some hints of that on good Twitter, too.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll do that, certainly. Good Twitter, bad Twitter, it's all the same, et cetera. It really isn't. But Formula One is still going to be a thing for 3 more weeks. We have 3 last F1 races to get through in this It's Vegas season, baby. It's Vegas season. Get ready to gamble. Dang it.
Get ready to pretend that like this is the most cringe thing you've ever seen, and then by the end of the race, you'll be like, that actually wasn't bad.
Exactly. Max, is that you? Etc. So
no, he's busy driving a GTP.
It's the first Max Verstappen championship point of the chase, I guess you could say, for his 4th championship. The easiest maths I can give you is if he wins, if he outscores Lando Norris, or if Lando Norris fails to score, Max Verstappen is world champion at the end of Vegas. I don't think it'll happen. I think it'll be Qatar sprint, just like last year, where he'll win the title. But we'll see. He could win it in Vegas this weekend. Get up bright and early for that one in the morning on Sunday, because it's 6 a.m. Sunday morning UK time, if you're interested in that. Have fun with that, Brits, etc. Don't complain about it. We get like 4 bad ones a year. Shut up. Now, that'll do. Is Vegas, Qatar, and then Abu Dhabi for the last 3 F1 races of the year. We'll be back next week to review that Vegas Grand Prix. But until then, I've been Dre Harrison. He's been RJ O'Connell, and he's been Cameron Buckley. To wrap it all up, Jorge Martin, your 2024 MotoGP world champion. Hasta la vista, baby.
Ciao, y'all.
As it turns out, they do call it the Honda Motor Company for nothing.